normal way of doing things, a perfectly normal way of doing business. And it seems to me that with specifically in respect to the IDNO protocol, that may well be sufficient. I do think that it is important that it's... Well, I am told that it is very important that it is complied with. And that's what makes it different, I think, from perhaps some of the other things. On the point about the fast track and then the PDP, you could possibly, I suppose, have a direction from the board to the CCNSO saying that the board's view is that there should be a methodology for ongoing contributions and required signing of documentation. Please feed that into your policy development process, and please bear that in mind when you are deciding on your policy. And that we would then do that. Now, what result we came to at the end of the day, of course, is entirely a different issue. But it seems to me that is the place where, if you're going to have discussions about that sort of thing, that's where it should be. And I'm talking, this would be very specifically in respect to IDNs, because that's what the PDP is about. And what it does is it actually creates legitimacy for whatever the result is. Because right now, if I can just take one simple example, and it's not even on the table, but application fees have been talked about. I think they're off the table now, but they have been talked about. There is a significant difference between charging the an application fee for a GTLD and charging an application fee for an IDN CCTLD, and it's simply this. The concept of charging an application fee for new GTLDs flows from the GNSO policy development process. They developed a policy that said you should charge an application fee. The concept of charging an application fee for an IDN CCTLD doesn't flow from any policy development process at all. It comes from a statement, I'm being unfair because there isn't actually a statement, but it comes from an attitude of the board that there should be one. And I consider that to actually be inappropriate. If you want us to talk about it, and if you want to direct us to consider it, then do so by all means. And you wanted to talk about it.
We have been discussing with Chris issues related to fees and maybe we could discuss a little bit and hear the sense of the members of both organizations on this subject. So if we look to development of IDNs as a new system, then I would qualify that there are three types of costs involved. The first would be development of IDN system as such, which is taking place already a number of years. And we could trace through the ICANN's budget how much money has been allocated to IDNs in general. And I think that annually this is about $3-4 million dollars. So that is the one big chunk. Another would be a cost associated with applications for fast track. And here, unlike in GTLD, new GTLD process, majority of costs are covered in territories. And ICANN covers very marginal part of the overall cost of preparing application, defining strings, selecting operator, and so on and so forth. So and then of course is the third part of the cost, which is running cost, operational cost, IANA cost associated with the IANA function, and so on. So and here we may think of different models of this cost recovery. So I would say concerning the first part of the development of IDNs, that cost already has been covered and has been paid. And one could argue, if we are going to put that money or that amount on the shoulders of ID and CCT other operators with their part, then that would be additional money to ICANN, and that would not be really that would be overhead of, because that part of money is already spent and somebody paid for it. On applications, I think that is really marginal and could be maybe recovered in time. And in reality, in my opinion, the only really expense which needs to be recovered is cost of IANA function, or the part of that cost. And then, of course, all overhead which is related to operations of ICANN, meetings and support of everybody who receives that support and so on. So, and that, in my view, is a real cost which we may accept need to be recovered on voluntary basis. So I'm just offering these thoughts for comments. Bill?
Thank you. Apologies for taking the microphone again. Thank you, Yanis, for your perspectives on the cost structure. I think my reaction is, you know, good governance is governance with the support of those being governed, actually. And I think if we look at the costs, I think it's really the operators themselves who have to decide which elements of costs they think are reasonable and appropriate, because they have to pay them. We as GAC members will not be paying them. So I would personally look very much towards the CCNSO to tell us if they feel they've had sufficient data and information on the proposed, any proposed cost breakdown by ICANN, if you think it's reasonable. I think that would be my take on it, rather than the GAC getting involved in any debate about which cost elements are appropriate and which are inappropriate. Thank you.
So now it should work.
Naomi from .kr. I agree with most of the statements being said, especially what Yana said about us being responsible mainly for the IANA function. But in reality, we have to, I think, in some way acknowledge the fact that the rest of the ICANN community or the sentiments of the rest of the ICANN community very strong feelings about the fact that the CCs have not been paying enough. I would like to disagree with that, but in general, I think we could make some kind of a motion to the effect of telling ICANN that, yes, we will make the effort.
Manal, please. Leslie, sorry.
After you. Thank you, Yanis. I think the whether one is paying enough or not should be based on an assessment of what the actual costs were. And given that we've been asking for that information for quite some considerable time, maybe the discussion can be more informed when we've received that, and we can then see whether it's enough or most certainly not enough. I don't think we can make that assessment without that information, and we have been asking for it for quite some time.
All right, thank you. Manal?
Thank you. As you mentioned, Chris, I cannot think of a country that would not agree to adherence to protocols and to the statement or the sentence or the clause you were mentioning. But again, the problem is, how would you enforce this close in practical life. Again, I fully understand ICANN's point of view, but I would like to see those in separate discussions. I mean, they should fairly delegate the IDN names, and then we can have a separate discussion on how costs should be covered and how agreements should be enforced. I mean, delegation should not be based on either financial aspects or political aspects.
Thank you, Manal.
Just to clarify myself, basically I do agree with Leslie that we would need a cost assessment. And of course, I don't think we agree with the fact that the budget of ICANN has been increasing at an exponential rate in the past couple of years. And maybe that's primarily the reason why we are asking for the cost analysis. But I mean, given that, I think in order for this to be a cooperative effort, there needs to be. I'm not saying that we should say yes, we will pay a lot more, but at least some mention of intention.
Manal.
And again, I would like also to support what Leslie said, that further information would help us advance our positions.
Leslie, please.
On a more positive note, we, as part of one of the working groups I'm on, have met with the Chief Financial Officer from ICANN this week. And I think it has been recognized that there is considerable work in progress on costs and financial systems within ICANN. And I think certainly that work has been very good. There's more to do, and there's been considerable progress made, which will enable informed discussions going forward.
Bill?
Yes, just to extend a little bit, point made by my colleague from Egypt shortly. One of the concerns I have about the idea of contracts and respect for IDNA and the rest of it is, even if you take the worst case scenario where somebody gets an IDN CCTLD in good faith and then they become a rogue operator, actually what would ICANN do? Are they seriously suggesting they propose taking somebody out of the route? Because I'm not really sure how you would enforce it if somebody really doesn't want to respect the IDNA protocol. And, you know, as with something familiar to legislators, you know, that it's quite easy to make rules and laws, actually, but you have to take into account that you have to be able to enforce them. Otherwise, they become valueless or they're just merely gestures. And I'm not suggesting that's the case here, but it's a question mark in my mind, actually, that what value would it be, even if you had an obligatory contract and you had specific commitments on IDNA that were broken? I know that there are procedures in the DOR, actually, for conciliation and the rest of it, but if somebody just says, well, no, we're not going to do it, and they're in the route, then, I mean, I'm afraid that I can't really see the value of that process. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. And that, listening to you, I think we could equally draw parallels with some rogue, if I may use that term, operators in CC space, who are not acting anymore as a CCTLDs, but rather than GTLDs. And here I'm referring to .tv and .me. Simply from the enforcement perspective, these extensions were allocated as a country codes, And now they're operating in reality as a G-code. So, and for me, at least in my mind, the problem you raised on enforcement of standards, here it is not enforcement of standards, here it is adherence to architecture, initial architecture of the system, and in some extent governance, and certainly nobody is taking them out from the root, and we're living with those operators as they operate.
Can I just respond to your I don't disagree with you, but I would ask you to consider just turning that on its head for a moment and imagine a circumstance where a rogue operator was preventing a number of other CCTLDs, including perhaps .eu, from operating properly. And my question to you would be, what would you expect ICANN to do in those circumstances? Because you might actually think that maybe they should have some power to do something.
Well, we haven't discussed that, and I haven't thought about it, but my initial reaction is we'd expect ICANN to talk to the local government, yeah, and take instruction from them. And I think, for the record, I don't think we have a colleague from Tuvalu here, but I don't think they're a rogue operator, actually. I think the local government were involved in the decision about how to use .tv, and I just think we should not refer to them in that way. And I think some of the other CCTLDs, they're clearly operating in competition more with GTLDs. I think as long as their local government have been part of that process, actually, then that does respect the principle of national sovereignty and indeed the GAC CCTLD principles. Thank you.
Yeah, I apologize for using that. Simply, I was referring to your rogue operator. But for me, it is indeed a question whether the initial architecture should be maintained, and now when we're entering in the discussion on blurring difference between CC space and G space, and with IDNs, it may visually become even less clear, this distinction, whether there is a way how to maintain initial architecture, initial purpose of delegation. And I'm not saying that it is. I'm not questioning the sovereign decision of that territory or government and internet community. I'm rather asking it philosophical question whether there should be some, whether we should do something in these circumstances, which may appear also in the future.
Well, if I can answer that question. Well, let me put it this way, actually, to simplify. One of my concerns is that I sense these arguments could have been made 10 or 12 years ago when ICANN was created, that in order to ensure that the operators were respecting, you know, security and stability standards, there was a need for ICANN to have a contract to enforce them. And maybe that argument was made. But clearly, we've learned in the interim, actually, that the registry operators we're confronting with are largely, you know, extremely reliable operators who, I understand, have a vested interest in making sure their names resolve. That's one of the main reasons why they respect these protocols. So that's my hesitation, actually. It's not because, and I think we need to state this very clearly, you know, the security and stability of the internet, I suspect, is the number one priority for all governments. Here, it's not to question the importance of security and stability. It's just whether really this is a convincing argument. Thank you.
My name is Nigel Roberts from the Guernsey CCTLD operator. I'd just like to interject with a technical comment. It was suggested by Chris, I think it was, about 10 or 15 minutes ago, that the IDNA protocol is somehow different, in that it's an internet standard that somehow has to be enforced by ICANN with some kind of compulsion. Because, what was the expression you used, Chris? It was because if a rogue CCTLD operator did the wrong thing, it could have wide-ranging effects.
No.
What was the exact wording?
That's not my understanding. What I was saying was it is my understanding that non-adherence to the IDNA protocol. And we need to remember that this is an ongoing protocol that is going to be revised and so on. So non-adherence to it or an unwillingness to make a change from version 1 required, from version 1 to version 2, or whatever the versions are, could not just affect the CCTLD itself, but affect other CCTLDs.
Okay, thanks for the exact wording. That is exactly the same as with the DNS protocol itself. I remember very clearly back in 1996 or thereabouts, there was one registry for .com. For a period of about 2 days, because of somebody non-adhering to the DNS protocol, although in this case it was intentional, their website disappeared and was replaced by somebody else's. A CCTLD, or indeed a GTLD registry operator, who doesn't comply with current standards today, could have effects far beyond their own territory. And yet, there is no suggestion that some kind of enforcement mechanism should be introduced in ICANN for that. As Bill quite rightly said, we all have an interest in making sure our names resolve and that they're done in a professional and technically correct manner. And I don't see that any new protocol is any different. It just goes against the way the internet developed.
Thanks.
So, any other comments? So maybe